You don't have to be anything, actually, because they're published questions. So if you're willing to kind of read all of the published questions and the answers, and you have a decent memory, you could just remember them. And I sometimes there were questions where by the third word in the sentence, I already knew what the answer was. So they only want to see if you're taking it seriously or not. I've given people the exam throughout the years, and I still remember two idiots who told us that they had basically taken a couple of six-packs and crammed the night before. And their results kind of spoke, of that. They had no clue about anything, and they failed miserably. But they're published questions. I mean, as long as you got the time and the inclination, there shouldn't be anything setting you back. I mean, unfortunately, there are just some people psychologically, they get very nervous when they're being examined. So, that's the only problem as I see it, is people with fears about failing an exam, and so, their nerves kind of screw them up. Otherwise, it's a relatively straightforward examination.
Well, that's what CW was for. Let me see if I can drop it. Or let me see if I have it, I mean. I always felt including CW was not that we needed CW for emergency purposes or anything like that. It was to separate out the people who really wanted it from the people who so-so wanted it. And especially for the extra exam, I'm still trying to get back to 20 words a minute. I had to have 20 words a minute for the extra exam in 1990. Now I'm in a CW class and trying to get back to 20 words a minute. So I was serious back then in learning it. I missed the CW part of it by one question. They asked you what the temperature was, what city was the guy from, and blah, blah, blah. And I missed it by one question, and it took me 6 months of every day practicing CW to get up to where I felt comfortable enough to take it again at 20 words a minute.
And
okay.
Then
class 13 words a minute. Yeah. Well, personally, I've heard a lot of guys argue back and forth about whether it was a good idea or not a good idea. A lot of people thought that CW would disappear overnight. I think it's more active now than it has been in years. Sale of iambic keys, it has never been as good as they are now. I've told the story more than a few times that I was listening to a podcast, and Bob Heil was on, and he mentioned that they had done away with the Morse code requirement. And I had not really looked into amateur radio for decades. And when I discovered that, I figured, what the hell, in for a pound. And I studied up and got my took my exams, and here I am today. So if they would have never taken away the Morse code requirement, you might very possibly be listening to static on this repeater at this time.
Duane.
Yes, Paul?
Yeah, in regard to CW, you're right. It's more popular now than ever. But I've come across people. They only have their license maybe 5-6 years, and they sit there and they can copy the CW without writing it down, which is just amazing. That's the way they're learning today. So you get guys only a few years in that could blow me away as far as, copying in their head, where when we were doing it, and Rich could attest to that, we were writing everything down because you needed to pass the test. And, but, the questions would be, you know, what did the guy do for a living, or, you know, what college did he go to, and you had to look down on your paper and see what you wrote. So that was important, but for some reason that bogged everybody down. You know, I'm stuck at a certain word per minute as well. But I think it's actually better now what they did. All the people coming in now, learning, just sitting there. I've gone into different Zoom things, and you look up, and everybody's just looking forward. They're not writing anything down. How are they doing this? Anyway, back to you.
Hey,
G2R1. Yes. Yes, David?
Back in December of last year, I was tuning around on 160 meters, and I heard some CW, and I guess upper CW, on my radio. It was a W1AW bulletin, RST-599 copy. I set the radio to decode, under CW settings, set decode CW to 100 hertz. Press the function knob, set CW speed at 18 words per minute, and in the decode window, select decode level and set it to 40. I had to tune to get the pitch just right, and then it was a clear copy. I watched each letter appear on the screen as the Morse code was being received. The bulletin was about solar conditions. Maybe I should try to operate CW in the future.
Doing about what Paul was talking about. They taught a couple of generations of ham radio operators the wrong way to learn CW. And now those of us, like Paul and myself, we're suffering in putting down that pencil because for me it's like a security blanket. I could copy much faster when I'm writing it down than when I'm just doing what they call head copy. And up until, I would say, 10 years ago, they taught it all wrong, which is pretty amazing. I don't know how many hams know that about CW, that they taught for decades, they taught the wrong way to learn CW. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, I think the point, though, is they were teaching people to learn CW for Signal Corps, for military, for business. And I think they weren't as interested in the speed of your copying and handling it rather than the accuracy of what you were taking down. So, you know, you might kind of listen and understand the conversation going on in CW, but, you know, if there are specific points that need to be addressed for military reasons, it probably were more biased towards less the efficient and speed and more the reproducibility and accuracy of the reading. So I think for their purposes, if you brought them back to life and told them that they were teaching it wrong, they would have their own rational reasons for why they chose that particular way of teaching people.
The problem was that...
comment again?
You get to a certain speed and you can't write that fast. So it limits you in terms of copying speed when you get to past 20 words a minute, I would say. Very few people can write 25 words a minute unless you're a stenographer. So you're right, Roy. They weren't that concerned about you copying 40 words a minute rather than writing it down so you can put it in a report, you know, or it was an invoice or something like that. But but now it's completely head copy, and those of us like Paul and myself, we're having a very difficult time in putting that pencil down. It literally is a security blanket. So I don't know if they were justified back then to do it, or they're not justified now to go the other way, but I do know that you limit yourself in terms of speed if you can only copy with a pencil.
Unfortunately, there's so many different bad ways of learning things. Every so often, I would have an argument with a guy who would bring these little cards with Morse code on them and say, here, you could learn Morse code by reading this card. And I kept on telling people, do not learn Morse code visually. It is the worst possible way, unless you work for the Navy and you're dealing with flashing lights or something strange like that. If you're going to do CW like amateur radios all do, you learn the sounds. Don't learn the images. So there's a lot of different bad ways to learn. If you think that writing stuff down slows you down, can you imagine the guy sitting there staring at the ceiling trying to imagine what the dits and the dots look like if they were on a piece of paper or a card?
Absolutely. The worst thing you can do besides writing it down is to learn it with flashcards or, like you say, to learn it visually. Worst thing you can do.
Yep, we agree. AB2GY, you want to say something?
I'm sorry, Roy. It's my second comment. It's Kilo Bravo to Delta Yankee. It's peace. It was 5 minutes, five words a minute for the novice when your Elmer gave it to you. Then it was 13 to get a general. And then it was 20 for the expert. Paul, you're absolutely correct. The naval operators didn't write it down. It was a language for the naval communication specialist. It was a language. They didn't write things down. If they had to have certain digits, codes, and things like that, they would stop and write the codes down for specific things. But listening to a message, they listened and they had it embedded in their head, and they knew what they did. 40 words a minute, 45 words a minute. Some got higher than that. And on the testing, yes, there was a phase where you had to draw circuits. You had to describe components. And we've come a long way. We've come a long way, and CW is very much popular today. I primarily, aside from Echolink and trying to get into the digital age, I operate 50 meters and 40 meters QRP CW. That's it. Sometimes I'll get sideband, sometimes AM, but yeah, those were the days. You had to know it. You had to know it. All right, gentlemen. KB2DY clear.
Okay, very good. Yeah, it's alive and well, and those people who thought that discontinuing the requirement would be its death SOG were incredibly incorrect. And, what can I tell you? Most times when people predict things, they're incorrect. Unfortunately, it makes life a little bit more complicated, but, it works out in the end. So, you know, we have a lot of guys who are big fans of CW. We have at least three people that I can think of on the net tonight that are taking classes and in brushing up and speeding up their CW, and that's great.
If anybody's interested, pulling on a CW class free of charge, it's an 8-week class, 2 times a week over Zoom from CW Academy. You can find them under the CW Ops website, that CWOPS website. If anybody's interested, they have beginner, intermediate, and advanced. And my instructor said I'm ready for the advanced, but I don't know. I don't know because of the not putting down the pencil thing. But anyway, if anybody's interested in getting it, you have nothing to lose, go to the CW Ops website and look for CW Academy.
Yes. Paul first, and then Ed.
Yeah, I've worked, Rich, quite a few times on CW, and absolutely, for the advanced group, absolutely, without a doubt. I've been talking, working, in a class, I could tell, that, these guys aren't. Some of them aren't as fast as you would think. And Rich has caught up to them. Absolutely. Back to you.
Okay, Ed, you want to say something?
Yeah, don't forget, ARRL transmits code classes on a regular schedule.
Yeah, they list it on in QST, and if you go to their website, they also list the schedules.
Yeah, I've used it today.
Yeah, they transmit on 7.047.50 on 40 meters, which is from here, from where we are, the easiest way to hear them. And they're on, I think, every day except the weekends. I don't think they're on the weekends. But they have code practice at 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30. I think it goes up to 35 words a minute, plus their bulletins. And as David was saying, they talk a lot about the solar activity when they're doing the bulletin part of it. And I think that's sent at 18 words a minute. But another free way to learn Morse code. But if you're seriously interested about learning Morse code, for free of charge, CW Academy.
Yeah, they also have a CW proficiency once a month, I think. They run the code, and you can write it down. I know, we just kind of poo-pooed writing it down, but you can write it down, and you can send it to them, and they give you a little certificate award. And I was always kind of curious of what kind of source material they use for the proficiency. So one day I decoded it, and apparently it was an old Victorian novel that was out of copyright. So they just kind of grabbed it and used a couple of paragraphs from a Victorian novel.
One point about that is one minute, person copies out of 3 or 5.
What, the proficiency exam or award or what have you?
The proficiency exam is what the test used to be back in my youth. You have to have 1 minute of person copies. It's 5 minutes of code, and you have to have 1 minute of perfect copy in there.
Oh, okay.
Again, the frequency on 40 meters is 7.
0.047.50. I don't know why they chose that, but it's 7.047.50, and it's different times during the day and night.
If I remember right, 9 a.m., 4 p.m., 7 p.m., and then maybe one more.
I think you're right, Ed.
Of course I'm right. I've been doing this all my life.
Long Island CW Academy, but they want $35.
See what I said about amateur radio operators. I love the ball, very tight with the wallet, but I understand. Well, the moral of the story is CW live. And, you know, check out the Bengali keys. They're very expensive, very beautiful iambic keys out there that people are buying, you know. And there are others. There are Kent Morse code keys. There are a whole bunch of manufacturers of Morse code keys. Any other comments on the subject?
I have a comment about Morse codes.
Okay.
Everybody running to ham radio rises in the early 60s has World War II surplus J38s that are available on the surplus market for limited pennies.
What, J38?
That's it.
Yeah, everyone and their brother manufactured those Morse code keys back in World War II. You know, I mean, if you're a fan of Lionel trains, there's a lot of J-38s that have Lionel written on the back of them.
I still use mine.
Ah, good for you. I have a J-38 as well. I got it off of eBay.
I used a Heathkit Keir with a speaker on it.
I'll bet you paid more on eBay than my father paid for mine.
I'd be willing to bet. Because the dollar was, you know, the dollar was a smaller thing back then to begin with. And eBay is filled with really strange people trying to make a profit. I was trying to get an electric screwdriver, and They were asking six times the list price for the darn thing. So, yeah, eBay certainly is not a place to make a great bargain. You know, if you want it and you're willing to pay for it, you could get it at eBay. But you're not going to get the best deal, most likely.
I use Amazon.
Well, Amazon's really not designed for used stuff. I mean, you can get... some crazy people kind of use Amazon like it's eBay and try and sell things. I had a robot from Forbidden Planet toy, and there was some idiot who wanted something like eight times the list price for that. But those are few and far between. Most of Amazon is set up for regular new product retail type of sales.
Well, if you look around, you can't find a renewed version of the item that you want.
Mine was 25 cents.
Yeah, well, I could believe that. Well, 25 cents got you a lot of things back then. I'm not quite as old as you are, Ed, but, you know, I used to have an allowance of 25 cents, so I could appreciate, when you're splashed with lots of money like that. So, you know, nowadays, I don't know what you could buy for 25 cents. I mean, they did away with the damn penny. It's only a matter of time before they do away with the nickel.
Quarters and dimes have a copper inside.
Not here.
Yeah, David and Ed copy, doubled. Ed, you want to repeat yourself?
I'm in Penn, Australia, but as far as the other days, I paid some for the Penn.
Oh, okay. I don't think I've paid a penny for anything in a much long time.
But a quarter or a dime probably worth as much as a penny in metal. They're filled with copper on the inside.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, they've kind of used cheaper metals on all the coins. They did away with the copper and pennies. That's a sandwich coin until it was discontinued entirely. But, you know, the only kind of cheap metal I think that are in coins where they didn't have to do much thinking about is nickels, which have nickel. Everything is now nickel and zinc and, you know, cheap stuff. Because it's simply the metal value of the coins became significantly higher than the value of the coins themselves. So people were melting them down, and, you know, get rid of it that way. But, you know, that's the nature of stuff. The only thing left is that hasn't been denatured and devalued is the nickel.
You want to get a machine to send and receive a CW?
Well, there's lots of computer programs that do sending and receiving. There's keyers that aren't run by Morse code keys. They're done by typing in the word, and it spits out the Morse code properly weighted. There's no discernible fist to it. It's all mechanical. So there's lots of that that's going on. I'm sure that W1AW uses an electronic keyer to key in to people. I doubt that there's some guy sitting in front of a station banging on a key. Certainly, Ed.
Yes. There's nobody sitting in a key at W1AW. But here's one point. They sell this thing that receives more code. It has to put some more code into it, and it gives you on a running stream the letters. The problem is, those assume perfect more code. I mean, more code is a dot, it's 3 digits long. This and dies in the same letter are separated by one disk. And if you're sending a machine code like that, it works perfectly. But no ham that I know does that. Every ham has what's known as a fish or a string, and that drives the administration.
Yeah, but a lot of the software kind of is designed with that in mind, and there's a certain range of acceptable values that the software will make a decent attempt at translating. If you're all over the place, then lots of luck to everyone. But I mean, some of the more sophisticated, well-written algorithms are capable of handling slightly out-of-spec fists. You know, I mean, I have a piece of software that kind of, I'm able to kind of open up a wider bandwidth than usual and feed it into this software. I think it's a CW scrubber, and it will give me a bunch of different CW operators on adjacent frequencies and decode their CW on the screen, especially highlight important things like their call sign and their RSTs and such.
Do you know about the upper CW and lower CW?
No. You alluded to it earlier. I guess it's just how the frequencies are arranged, vaguely like upper sideband and lower sideband.
Yes, that's it. and I guess upper side, upper CW, lower CW, you can receive like the upper part or the lower part of the signal, so you're receiving much less, or say half the bandwidth.
CW is always at one frequency. So for that, it comes in handy is if you're trying to match a predetermined frequency, that's where upper and lower makes a difference. If you want so many kilohertz, and upper and lower makes a difference. Otherwise, it doesn't matter if it's really only one frequency.
Yeah, I don't think you get the same benefits that single sideband provides of efficient information transfers. You don't have things like underlying carrier frequency and such.
No, absolutely not. But like I said, if you're expecting somebody's transmit on zero frequency, it could be about 500 hertz above or below. And often you don't even know which one it is. You have to play around with it.
Okay, I mean, do people use it that much these days?
It's not a choice, it's an accident.
Oh, okay.
So if the CW signals 500 hertz above and 500 hertz below, you know, then it would be 1 kilohertz in total bandwidth. So I guess the idea is, you know, to have upper and lower CW is to cut that bandwidth in half.
No. The idea is, in order to, let's say you want to be on 7050. If you send your reader to 7050, it has a built-in 500 hertz offset. And it depends on how you reset, whether it's 7050.5 or 7049.5. Kind of random, depending upon how you had it set the last time you were on sideband. But it's one single frequency. They're never sent at the same time as two frequencies.
Yeah, so that means that it's either 500 above or 500 below, and you can choose?
Sort of, if you know how your reader is wired up. It's often pretty random. But if you're not going as a published frequency, you'll never know the difference. It will be at 7049.5 or 7050.5, but you really can't tell the difference. You just tune it in.
Someone said that upper and lower CW is really good when you have a crowded band of frequencies.
Okay, that's when you use stereo headphones and it's tuned to slightly different frequencies. So, yeah, you send your read for upper sideband or lower sideband and then you'll shift even though you're on CW. Depending on the design of your radio. But if you have one frequency in one headphone and the other frequency in the other headphone, you can use spatial dimension to the frequency.
Kind of diversity reception.
Not kind of, it is.
Well, the idea is maybe I should listen to some more CW with this device that can read it.
Yeah, but the key point is that they have a stereo headphone. One frequency seems to be coming from the right, another frequency seems to come from the left, and other frequencies move around your head.
Well, it depends on the radio. The radio's got to put out that signal. You know, otherwise you're just as good with monophonic headphones.
Agreed 100%.
Thank you, Ed. KG2RY.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Ed. Once again, I'm AC2GS. This is the Limewark Technical Net. We still have a little bit of time left if anyone has a question or a comment or a topic tonight. You do? Hit that push to talk.
I have a question. W2BC.
Okay, David first, then Rich second.
Yeah, I have a question about multiple transducers in a instrument for pickup. Multiple transducers versus one transducer.
Okay.
And this is my question, you know, what difference does it make? You know, if you have a guitar and you install the pickups, pickups are transducers, one is called K&K Classic Transducer Pickup. The other one, I think, was like Fishman. It had one transducer, you attach it to the inside of a guitar, right above the bridge.
Yeah.
Now, I guess a question is, what would be the difference between one and the other? To have one transducer as opposed to four transducers.
Well, I guess it gives you more options. You could use one to four of the transducers. They could be a slightly different quality, have different characteristics. There's no such thing as a perfect transducer that turns mechanical sounds 100% accuracy into electronic signals. So I guess it gives you more options and allows you to use slightly different quality transducers under different circumstances, covering the surface of your guitar.
Yeah, I agree. But, you know, one transducer, it's one device attached to the guitar, inside the guitar, above the bridge. And the four transducers are attached in four different places. You know, maybe for four transducers, you get more signal. You know, these pickups, they require preamplification. And the four transducer pickup, you know, you can just plug it right into the PA.
Well, yeah, it depends upon the electronics. Transducers are not, as far as I'm aware, completely just mechanical. A lot of them have active components that interface with it. So, yeah, it could be used to increase the gain, but I think if it was solely to increase the gain, you know, people would just kind of use more active transducers and limit it. There must be some aspect of the different transducers or at least the different locations that supply a modified signal that some people prefer.
QSL. But four transducers give you bigger signal. I don't know if they sound better than the one transducer pickup. And I haven't experimented enough with it. Although I like to say that I plugged that four transducer pickup into an audio recorder, and the results, I guess, are pretty good.
Okay, I mean, I would assume they would be. It's a commercial product. If it wasn't, you know, I mean, there might be some nuanced differences, but, you know, it wouldn't be night and day. So that's understandable, and that's how I would assume. Given, you know, professional equipment can be very expensive and is kind of, you know, created by very clever people. So, you know, it doesn't strike me as either configuration is inherently slipshod.
Yeah, Well, the four transducer pickup cost quite a lot more than the single transducer pickup. So maybe it's about that, too. And I guess, you know, for whatever this guitar, I, I spent the money to get the best that I could use. To say that, what do you know? We already asked this question.
Was that a question?
No, no, we talked about this, you know, that, fretless guitar and the microtones and the half tones and quarter tones in between and the difference in the sound and playing music on it for like South Asian music or Middle Eastern music, you know, some kind of music that only a guitar that has the in-between notes can. You need the in-between notes to play that music.
Yeah, I mean, there's different cultures, music that doesn't stay 100% on the octaves that Western music, for the most part, holds to. You have atonalities and all kinds of interesting tricks that the Asian music has, and you would have to have a modified guitar to reflect that, I would assume.
I bought this guitar on Amazon. You know, I could have taken another guitar to the pro, you know, and he would take all the frets out and leave a smooth surface on the neck, you know, no frets. And it just cost too much.
Yeah, well, that's understandable. It's expensive to have American technician undo some aspects of manufacturing a guitar versus getting a stock Chinese guitar that's just fretless. Most of the Chinese stuff is inherently less expensive than just having a technician adjust and modify your own instrument.
Yes, sir. Well, I know about the Chinese guitars, and they're pretty decent, but they're not great. And, you know, on the guitar, when you're looking down, there were these fret markers, fret dots, little dots. And with the guitar, you know, as it was, when it came out of the box, those fret markers were in the wrong place, you know. They were in-betweens where the frets would have been. So I take it to the pro, and he removed the frets that were there, put in all new frets, and he had to know exactly where to put them.
Well, yeah, I would assume that. I mean, that's why you're paying him and not a local handyman who has a couple of screwdrivers.
Well, he had to take a drill, and he needed to drill out all the dots that were there, and then to fill them up with some ebony grout or some kind of thing, and then he had to drill new holes where the frets actually were, you know, the when you press the note with your finger, that's where the dot is supposed to be.
Oh, okay. I mean, it was probably epoxy. Nowadays, everyone uses epoxy for covering up holes and such.
You know, I looked at some better quality guitars. They have them, you know, and there's one store that sells them. They're kind of pricey. I asked them, are there fret markers? Because I'm a beginner. I need to learn how to play. They said, no, there aren't any fret markers, so I know that if I ever buy one of their guitars, you know, I have to take it to the shop and have them put the fret markers in.
Yeah, I think high-end equipment is usually designed that way. You know, holes for some future modification, which strike me as a kind of less elitist instrument. So I can certainly understand that.
Yeah, but it's like learning CW. You know, you got to learn the finger position of the neck. So you have to, at least for me, I have to have some kind of marker, some kind of, how to say, you know, when it is aligned properly.
Yeah, I understand, but, you know, these guys are thinking on a different level. They're, you know, especially expensive equipment. You know, best you find equipment that comes already pre-marked, or you just have to give it again to a technician and pay his fee for his expertise in being able to mark the proper fret positions.
QSL. Well, you know, for that sound that you get out of that instrument, you know, it's really kind of nice and relaxing and, healing, kind of healing, you know, if you can just make those sounds, you know. So I think, you know, I want to do some guitar duets and, make my own sounds into the tape recorder, maybe for posting.
Okay. Well, David, we're running late for time, and Rich wanted to say something before we end the segment. So thank you, as always, David, for your participation, and we'll talk to you down the line.
Thank you, Roy. I really appreciate your intelligence and your knowledge. 73 KG2RY.
73, David. Rich, are you still there?
I'm still here. David, I just wanted to know something about guitars. If you're just a beginner, I wouldn't suggest a fretless guitar unless you're taking lessons. Specifically for that purpose. They're very hard to play. Anyway, my question is briefly, because I don't want to hold Paul up, is I think I'm going to make a magnetic loop out of coax. What would people suggest for the spreaders so I could keep the loop, you know, shape? Go ahead.
Okay. I haven't really thought about it. I mean, pretty much anything with a reasonably mechanical strength. You know, you get different rods. You can get them made out of plastic. You can get them made out of wood. You could have them 3D printed. I've kind of seen pictures of things like that. So you know, there's a lot of different choices. You could use dowels and plastic inserts at either end to kind of have little U's that hold on to the bits and pieces of the coax. Anyone else with any good ideas of what kind of spreader material to use for a magnetic loop? Yeah, I guess. If he's a very nice neighbor, you know, I'm sure after a few hours he'd get tired of holding it, though. Anyway, so, you know, like I said before, you know, I wouldn't use things like carbon fiber because that'll cost you a lot of money. But, you know, there's wood dowels, there are plastic inserts, there are all kinds of little doodads you could probably configured so that they kind of hold the diameter of the loop.
All right, I'll look around. Let's go to Paul. Thanks, Roy. W2BZ.
Okay, Del. Thanks, everyone. Hope you enjoyed yourself. Hope you learned a few things. And hope you'll come back next Sunday when we try and do this all over again. But it is now time for WS2N with the SpaceNet report.
Okay, very good. Thanks, Roy. AC2GS, WS2N, SpaceNet report. That's looking at a couple of the flights that are due to go out of Florida. And it looks like the next couple of days they're probably going to be considering the hurricane. Hurricane Melissa, which is going to look like it's going to go right over Jamaica. But then earlier today, I'm sure you guys got it too, is if you signed up with the ARRL, they sent out messages to stay away from certain frequencies on 40 and on 20 meters. You know, I have the frequencies here as well. They want you to keep away from the hurricane net. Sometimes it also comes on 14.325. That's been like that for years, that frequency. And also 40 meters, 7.268. So, I guess for the next couple of days, they'll be looking at that storm. We'll have to keep an eye on it. There's a bunch of hands down there. They have to get the messages out for that. And I think that's going to foul up some launches as well down in Florida. All right, yeah, let me drop it. I'll start with the first topic. There was a launch yesterday, they call it the H-3 rocket from Japan, which is a heavy vehicle, probably almost 2 million pounds of thrust. They run liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen on the first and second stage. And they also have four booster rockets attached to the first stage as well. That separates after a couple of minutes, and then the core stage continues on. And it launches, like I said, out of Japan. The reason I bring it up is the payload it's called the HTV-X, which is a cargo vehicle that they developed that is going to dock to the International Space Station, and they're going to wind up delivering like 12,000, 13,000 pounds worth of stuff, science equipment, food, clothes, and everything that they need up there. You have seven astronauts that have to be resupplied. We have a bunch of different cargo vehicles that go up there now, and now this is just going to be an additional one that probably fly once a year. The HTV-X is what this one's called, because it's an upgraded version of the HTV that was launched nine different times in a nine-year period. That stopped, about 4 or 5 years ago. And the reason for stopping it is because they were developing this new one, which is larger, has more capabilities, it has, all kinds of its own power. You could power refrigeration for science things that have to go up to the space station. Anything, they have cryogenic systems built into the spacecraft. Anyway, got off the ground in good shape. It should dock with the International Space Station shortly. And they have bigger plans for the HTV-X as well for the future. Providing they eventually go ahead with the space station around the moon, this thing has the capability of launching on that same rocket, the H-3 rocket, and going all the way to the moon and docking with that future space station. course, right now with the situation with NASA, that project looks like it's on hold. But I wouldn't give up on that. I can see that coming back to life somewhere in the future. Any comments? Okay, nothing heard. By the way, it's very hard to get information with the American space launches because the NASA site is not updating any information on their site due to the government shutdown. So that's a problem. You know, there's other websites and magazines and stuff you can still get plenty of information from, but right now NASA is not really one of them. So it goes. One of the changes that they plan on doing is maybe getting away from SpaceX, maybe not entirely, for the moon landing program. And I think I talked about this last week and the week before, but, you know, bring it up again. It looks like they probably will think more about for the first landing, maybe actually going with Blue Origin, using the New Glenn rocket. Blue Origin is building a lunar lander called Blue Moon, which is quite large. I mean, it's like, I don't know, 50 feet tall and, maybe 40 feet in diameter. It's a huge thing that they plan on using, anyway, in the future. Let me go back. The actual plan for landing the people first on the moon is to use SpaceX. They would like to use their Starship to do that. Go to the moon with the space launch system from NASA with the Orion spacecraft on board with a crew of four, and go into orbit around the moon, and then dock with the Starship that is not completed yet. It's still under development, and that's the reason that it could be a problem. But, the plan was to dock with that. Starship would take two people from the Orion spacecraft, land on the moon, do what they have to do for about a week, relaunch, and dock with the Artemis again, and then all four crew members would return to Earth. But for various reasons, mainly it looks like SpaceX is behind schedule, although they claim that they're not. It looks to me like they right now they are, so they need to work quite a few miracles to be able to develop their system to the point where it will be safe to actually send a crew from lunar orbit down to the moon, back up to lunar orbit, and this is supposed to be reusable, and another flight will come out, and they'll reuse the same rocket, do the same thing, land on the moon, come back up. We'll have to see. That looks like it's kind of problematic now, so they're going to probably, in my opinion, go with Plan B if that doesn't work out. Plan B is to take Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin company, who's building the New Glenn rocket, which has flown once so far in January and was very successful. And they plan on building, they've already built it, but they plan on launching another one this November, sometime during this month. And if that's successful, they could show that they're in the right, going in the right direction. They might eventually use Blue Origin for the first lander if SpaceX isn't ready. As it was, Blue Origin's lander was planned to be used for eventually the fifth flight. that could be pushed.